You're listening to RN's weekly pop culture program, The List. I'm Cassie McCullough, and now it's time to turn to a subject that might give you a little thrill, a little shiver of anticipation down the spine, or it might fill you with dread and make you want to hide in a dark corner. It might even be a subject about which you know absolutely nothing. And if that's the case, then you better listen up. It's the rapidly evolving world of digital dating, social media and smartphone apps that are all about meeting up, hooking up, and even breaking up. There are some estimates that up to 1/5 of heterosexual couples now meet online, with the figure even higher for gay couples. But how is this supercharged digital environment changing the delicate nature of romance? Well, one of our next guests has written that dating in 2012 is an extreme sport. She's the features director for Elle Australia magazine, the eagerly awaited first edition of which will hit newsstands on Monday. Hello to Alex Gorman.
Hi there, Cassie. Thanks for having me on. So yes, I just wrote a piece called The State of Dating in 2013 for Elle's first issue, and I decided to try it out in a very kind of first-person experimental way. So I signed up for every single online dating site I could get my hands on in Australia, as well as a lot of online dating apps. So things like How About We, that lets you crowdsource dates, Tinder, where you can flick through and reject people that you're not that interested in, then a new one called Fancied, which is basically Tinder, but set up in Australia and more clearly designed to be monetized. I also logged on to RSVP and eHarmony, which are a little bit more traditional when it comes to online dating, less smartphone focused, more about perusing on your computer as if you were recruiting for a job interview.
Well, that Tinder, it was launched in the US last year. It claims to be the world's fastest growing dating app. And just before we began this conversation, I spied you sharing it and explaining it to one of our other guests today, Sam De Brito, who's an author and Fairfax columnist. He regularly writes about the business of being an Aussie bloke in his blog, All Men Are Liars. G'day, Sam.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Well, you know, this is a learning occasion for you as well. You might be able to take something home from this.
I think the title of my blog is very apt for the online dating world.
Well, we'll get to that. But also joining us from Melbourne is comedian Nath Valvo. He's delved into the world of the gay hooker up with his one-man show, Grindr, A Love Story. He's also been touring this year's comedy festivals with a stand-up show called Almost 30. G'day, Nath.
Hello, how are you going? I would like to add that I am actually gay. I didn't delve into the gay apps just for the fun of it as a straight guy. I just wanted to make that clear very quickly.
Yeah, it's good to have that out there.
Yeah, now, I'm not committed to my research.
Well, now that we've convened this high-powered summit, first to you, again, Alex Gorman. You write that to date in 2013 is to date in a state of amplification. What do you mean by that?
Essentially, our ability to contact or not contact someone is hugely expanded in 2013, and our ability to find out about them is really expanded as well. So you can be rejected on 10 different social media platforms. You can very, very easily and very obsessively find out a lot of information about someone before you've ever even met them. And you can see exactly where they are and what they're doing, depending on how much they share. So your love life is kind of put under a microscope, and you can very, very closely observe people now in ways that were just unimaginable 20 years ago. I mean, 20 years ago, it was Keith said that Sally said that you're dropped. And now you just have to unfollow someone on Twitter.
Uh-huh. That world that you've been, well, as you say, more than just delving into, Nath, describe how it works for people who've never come across it.
Well, Grindr's taken the gay social scene by storm all over the world. Apparently, there's about 200,000 gay men in Australia alone have downloaded the app. And basically, you bring it up and it's based on GPS. So it's a little bit creepy, but it tells you where the people are in meters away from you. And there's a picture of them and their stats, you know, what they're into, their favorite book or movie. And so you can be sitting on a train or sitting in the ABC studio in Melbourne and you bring up Grindr and it can say, oh, here's Steve. And a picture of Steve, and it has that he's 500 meters away, and you can start talking then and there. And if you want, you can go with it from there with the location.
Yeah, and so this is the subject of your show. So, yep. You know, for some people that would be like quite a brutal way of, you know, interacting, like having your heart kind of out there.
Yep.
But do you think that it's a part of a gay subculture that really is, well, probably not really similar to that which you see in the mainstream culture?
Well, I believe that it's always a little bit harder for gay men to meet each other, only because there's a lot of gay people that don't like gay clubs and the gay club culture, and the music is quite awful if you're not into 90s pop. So there's a lot of gay guys that find it hard to meet people. So I think that's why, even before iPhone apps, in the late 90s, gay websites were always very popular as well, with people meeting online that way. So I just feel that gay people have always been a little bit more ahead of it, solely because it's needed more, I think.
Mm. And what do you make of Tinder? I mean, do you see it as a kind of something that began in gay culture and that's now translated across to the heterosexual community? Like, does it surprise you?
Just like fashion, we're ahead of it. What happens on these apps is absolutely no different to what happens in a club or in real life dating. It's just streamlined and it's a hyper version of it all. So the things that you don't like about people, there's people that lie about themselves and what they do, there's people that pretend to be people they're not. That all happens in everyday life, I think. It just happens when you're using an app. It just gets to that second point quicker.
Sam DiBrito, what do you think? Is it just the same, really, as interacting in real life?
Well, I think whether we admit it or not, we're pretty brutal in our assessment of who we're attracted to. And I think when you're in a physical environment, when you spy someone across the room and you say, oh, they look nice, and then they might turn in another direction, or you see them clump across the room, or they open their mouth and you're just like, oh my, that's not going to work. And I think there's often a thousand little things that we're assessing when we look at someone in person that you're unable to do online. And I know it's been my experience that people tend to represent what they consider to be the very, very best image of themselves online. So when you do meet them, oftentimes they look nothing like the picture that they've posted under their profile.
That's actually the genius of this new series of dating apps and things that are being done on your smartphone, is unlike with traditional sites like RSVP, eHarmony, or even OkCupid, which encourage you to write essays and essays about who you are, which inevitably becomes an essay about who you want to be, you have it completely streamlined. You say maybe two or three things about yourself, or you don't have to say anything at all. You can just use a picture. So there's less scope for lying because you're not being asked as much information. So it has that kind of more visceral, immediate, seeing each other across the room moment to it.
Nathan, when you're talking about Grindr, I mean, is that something that, you know, once you make that hookup, you've kind of already committed to something? Is it a bit of a shock when you meet the person face to face?
Good word, shock. Yeah, I suppose you've just got to go into it with a bit of intelligence about it. If you're talking to a person that's got a baseball cap or a pair of sunglasses on in a black and white photoshopped photo, you know, your alarm bells go off a little bit. It just depends on what you're looking for. I think it's all about expectations. You can't be hurt, or you can't go into these things if you go into it with the right frame of mind. For instance, when I was on Grindr for a year using it, I had absolutely zero expectations from every single person I spoke to, and used it solely for its purpose, which was for maybe for some hookups. And from that, I wasn't really disappointed. But I feel that some of my friends and people that use it for other things, for the bigger relationship stuff, are definitely getting disappointed time after time. So I think it's a point of figuring out what you actually can get from these things.
We talk about individuals manipulating the system, but what about the applications themselves manipulating the way we feel as, you know, vulnerable people looking for love or romance or whatever it is you're looking for? How much do they game it for us? I mean, I feel like a lot of the technology that has been developed around actually like gambling is being used to understand the psychology of people engaging with these apps. And really, it's hard to not be played by them.
They certainly suck you in a way that kind of makes you want to keep going back, whether it's something like Tinder where you slide through pictures and almost reach this state of flow where you're just looking without really understanding what you're doing and spending a lot of time, or whether it's something like eHarmony, which will send you dozens of emails, and if you sign off, it'll send you even more emails saying someone's interested in you, this person's just checked you out, trying to lure you back in, reel you back in. And the desire to get laid is one of those like fundamental human things that just goes right for the heart and grips you and gives you this really intense adrenaline rush. So it's very easy for them to use just subtle little pokes and prods to really, really set your feelings on fire.
Well, not even so subtle. I mean, I think the OkCupid service really uses flattery to an extreme. When you haven't been using it all that often, apparently it sends you an email congratulating you on being one of the site's most attractive users, inviting you back in and saying, hey, you've reached this new level where you can now see these also hyper-attractive people. But one of the variations of the email apparently says, we don't send this email to everyone on OkCupid. Go ask an ugly friend and see. It's this kind of nastiness about
that's why I got sent that email by my friend.
But yeah, do you see this nastiness, Nate, at all?
Well, the thing about, I don't know about Tinder and stuff, but Grindr is actually free, but they do this sneaky thing where they give you 200 profiles, and when you've gone through them in about 5 minutes, you go to scroll to the 201st and then you have to pay to continue. So they do suck you in at the start, but you can continue using it for free only with the 200 they give you if you choose.
So it's like the bejeweled blitz of hooking up.
Exactly right. I think it's, if we're going to get deeper into ask questions like this, I think that it's kind of the same way Candy Crush asks you to pay for more points to continue playing because you're addicted to the pretty colours and the sound effects. Like, the people that make these apps are in it for a business, so that doesn't make them evil. You just got to be smart about how you use it, I think.
Mm. And what about safety? I mean, obviously school kids and teenagers should be really carefully informed about these kind of things, but adults, it's a completely different thing. It's a matter of choice. Do you feel like you're compromised with people knowing where you are and stuff about you?
There's another gay app out now. It's called Hornet. And this, how is this for creepy people? You can actually look up an address. So you just say that your ex lived on Smith Street in this suburb. You can actually look up that suburb and that street. The app will go to that street and then bring up anyone using that app in that street.
Wow.
Ooh. Yeah. So that's the new app that can do that. But you know that signing up to it. So you're an adult and you make that decision.
Yes, Dan.
Obviously, you do have to be careful, and I think that's why, even on dating websites, they recommend that a first date is just a coffee somewhere populated.
Daylight.
Yeah, don't go to a underground car park and drink a bag of goon with them. But look, as I talk, I've just realised that both my stepmother and one of my sisters met their partners online, married people that they met online. And I think that there's, for a certain, certain age group, especially for older people, it can be very, very handy because they don't, I think once you get into your 40s and 50s and 60s, you're not going to be out hitting the clubs. And it can be quite confronting coming out of a divorce or a separation, going back into the single scene. So I think it works very well for that group and also for those cheeky kids.
I think basically for anyone who doesn't like going into a place with punishingly loud music and glomming their face onto the first person they see that they think looks all right, it's kind of a nice alternative suggestion.
Look, whatever we've come to in this discussion, I think it's true that the course of true love never did run smooth. With apologies to Shakespeare there, I think I completely made it.